So, as we were talking, we were trying to compile the timeline for this, and it really started with Patrick's love for history.
Yes, almost 20 years ago, maybe a little bit more than that. I just wanted to do something to remember those that served in Vietnam and that were killed in action or died while being over there. I visited libraries, and then finally I went down to the Central Library, which has a mass, source of information and that, and I started to go through the microfilms and things and the scrapbooks, an incredible scrapbook collection down there. I started to see not only stories about veterans that were serving in Vietnam, but also, sadly, the obituaries of those that had been killed in action. And the obituaries about them. And I said, I don't want them forgotten. I don't want their sacrifice forgotten. I don't want their families forgotten. So I started to play around with collecting the obituaries and trying to make some order of it and that. I'm from Kenmore, New York, and I said, well, I'm going to start with the casualties from Kenmore in the town of Tonawanda. I was able to find most of them over a period of time. And then I said, well, I knew quite a few from the Buffalo City area, so I'm going to do the city now. Well, of course, there were so many more in the city than from the Canton area. And then, I just said, I got to keep going. I've just got to keep going on this. So I went to Erie County. I did Erie County. And, of course, this is over a period of time. I'm going down there early in the mornings to do this and that. And finally I said, geographically, I'm going to do the western New York counties from Erie and Niagara all the way east to Genesee and north and south of that. That was my area of operation, for say.
And when you set your mind to something...
Well, I wasn't going to let this go. I was really passionate about this.
Vietnam vet as
yes,
well.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't, want them forgotten.
What's your service record, Pat?
Oh, I enlisted in the United States Army in 1967. After my basic training, advanced training at Fort Sam Houston as a medic, I was first sent to Germany. And I was in Germany for about 4 or 5 months, and I got orders to go to Vietnamese language school at Fort Bliss, Texas, in El Paso. And I went down there, and from there, in October of 1968, I got orders for Vietnam, and I went over there and served a year until October of 1969 with the 5th Infantry Division, 11th Infantry, 1st Battalion of the 11th Infantry, and... Then after I had about 6 months to go, and I served that at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I was discharged in July of 1970.
And you, of course, was doing all of this searching of records and getting biographies of these young kids, mostly, who had passed in Vietnam while you're working and doing other things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Retired, from the post office on William Street. And from that point on, I just went full-fledged on this. I just really wanted to complete this project to the best that I could. And we came up with well over, 500 throughout the eight counties of Western New York of casualties. Now, some, they were born in Buffalo, for example, or wherever in the counties and that, and then they left. For their families moved and that, and they enlisted in other cities and things, but their roots were here, and we actually found many of them. That was the pilots, especially, had moved on, to different cities and that. But many of them were born here in Buffalo, went to school here, graduated from here. Many of them may not have been native Buffalonians, but somehow wound up in Buffalo and lived here for, a number of years and then went into the service and that.
And then in 2015, you worked with Forest Lawn to get it online so this could be shared with others.
Right. Mr. Joseph Dispenza, the president of Forest Lawn, when he saw what we had compiled in a work that we entitled In Remembrance Of, which has a collection of all these obituaries that were compiled and what photographs we had and what personal stories. He was insisting that this be put online for the communities. That's just the way he is, and that's the way Forest Lawn is. And sure enough, on Veterans Day in 2015, we were able to launch that site on the Forest Lawn webpage.
But that database was not complete at that time.
Not altogether to where it is now, of course. We did make some additions to it, and it'll always be a work in progress. We encourage people and families, if you know of those that were killed or died while serving in Vietnam, whatever information you have, a story about them, and we can put that on the website, and we have done that. And people, families, and friends have come forward with some additional information for that.
But that's how Norm got involved. How did you two meet?
Well, we met about a year and a half after I started trying to find pictures and biographical information for those from Western New York whose names were on the wall. I had gone to a Veterans Day ceremony at the wall and a fundraising event, and they showed all sorts of information about the wall of faces that they were trying to create. And the first time I had heard about it, and they were collecting photographs, biographical information for every name on the wall, and I thought this would be a great PR. PSAs could go out. I could do Western New York. We could do all sorts of great things. And I came back to Buffalo all charged up and worked on it for about a year and really got nowhere until a friend of mine introduced me to the communications department director at Buff State, where they had their communications classes for advertising and public relations do an actual nonprofit group for their semester project. They accepted the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund Wall of Faces project and me, and I started working with two groups of young students who worked on ways to get the word out about us wanting to get pictures, biographical information for all of these folks. That progressed. They were helpful. They developed a Facebook page for me, which unfortunately has been static since it was created. It has one video of me talking about the whole project. But during the course of that, I was introduced to Pat and his database. And so I contacted Pat and said, you know, this is something that I'd like to work with you on. He's done the lion's share of the work. He had over 500 articles, obituaries about all these people from Western New York or with ties to Western New York. At the time I started, there were almost 150 from Western New York that had no pictures, had no information in the wall of faces. Christmas of 2015, I put the national office in touch with Patrick's database. And we went at that point from 128 names down to about 25. They took information for over 100 people in Patrick's database and added their information to the National Wall of Faces.
And those last 25, though, those were the sticklers.
They were, but we were able to find out where they went to school. I do some performances locally, and every time I performed, I would talk to the audience about it, and I had people come up afterwards, say, I knew someone. And I said, well, I'd love to get their pictures. And some of them were new. Some of them were people we already had a picture of, but one of the important things we're trying to do is build a life story for every name that's on the wall. And to do that, we need more than just one old, fuzzy, black-and-white newspaper photograph from 1967. So we've been trying to get additional pictures, additional biographical information, so we can tell the life story of all of these individuals whose average age was 22 when they died.
Is there a particular life story that stands out for you, Norm?
Well, the one family I've been involved with in particular here in Buffalo is the Palumbo family. And their oldest son, oldest brother at this point, Anthony Palumbo, was killed in Vietnam in 1967. The family subsequently had erected a memorial there's a club called the Big Timers Club. It's an Italian-American club over in the Lovejoy District. And they actually put up this very nice monument for Anthony and his service. When I was telling everybody about what I was doing, because it's my topic of conversation for everyone I meet, I was talking to my shoemaker, the guy who repairs my cowboy boots. And he says his best friend's oldest brother was killed in Vietnam. And I said, well, I'd love to get more pictures. And he put me in touch with the Palumbo family. And I wound up sitting down with the three younger brothers, talking about Anthony, what he had done. Anthony was actually in the same company as Chuck Hagel, the former Secretary of Defense. And Chuck Hagel remembers Anthony very well to this day. Anthony was the one who taught them all how to make spaghetti properly and was always able to find a bottle of red wine to get it done right. But I sat with the family, I got the stories, and they had some additional pictures, funeral cards, things they gave me. Temporarily, I scanned those in, put captions on them, and so Anthony's page on the wall of faces, instead of having three photographs, now has 18.
In Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C. Yeah, the wall of faces, Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, vvmf.org/wall of faces.
And it's particularly important this year because Veterans Day is going to be the 35th anniversary of the Vietnam Veterans Wall in Washington, D.C.
Exactly. Exactly. So Patrick and I are thrilled to be down to the finish line on the 450 that are attributed to the eight counties of Western New York, having found the last two and is just waiting on a yearbook.
Just talk to me about these last two, Patrick.
Well, you know, it's like they say, there's always one. Well, in our case, there was two or three that were really, really something. We got, you know, it took a while, but as Norm had mentioned, we started to, you know, we increased our knowledge of how to find these. You know, we were able to contact schools. We were able to see, relatives, and maybe somebody might with that same name might be in a phone book or something, and you might get lucky. And sure enough, in some cases we did. But when we got down to the last two or three, it got personal. I'll put it that way. It got personal. Here we had
you were on a mission
2 years and even longer than that, and I'm saying no way. We're not going to let these stop us. One of the more difficult one was Sergeant Arthur Fisher. He was born in Belfast, Ireland. He enlisted in North Tonawanda, New York. Now, wherever you enlist, it's your home of record. You may not have even slept a night there, but if you signed those papers in North Tonawanda, New York, that's your home of record. Not Belfast, Ireland, where you were born. It's where you enlisted. And that threw us curves at time because they had, in some cases, nothing to do with what was listed as their home of record. I couldn't find any evidence of Arthur Fisher in North Tonawanda whatsoever, through schools, through address checks, anything at all. The closest I could find in this area concerning him was on the notification that was sent to his next of kin. There was another name mentioned of someone living in Niagara Falls, Ontario. And this is 50 years ago because Sergeant Arthur Fisher was killed in action in 1970, and almost 50 years ago. And there were actual last names of that person in the city directory of Niagara Falls, Ontario. So I started to call a few. Some phones were disconnected. Others, you know, didn't respond to the messages, and others just said, no, I don't know who you're talking about. So, okay, let's keep going here. So then I started to write emails to the schools in Belfast, Ireland, Northern Ireland.
That's a long way to go.
The library in Belfast, Northern Ireland. And then I got a little bit back from them saying that, and I knew he was buried in London, England, in Southampton, London, England. They referred me to the libraries in London, England. So I contacted them, and somebody wrote back a wonderful, wonderful genealogy of his family. He was married. He had two children. And then they didn't know where they were after 1980. So kind of hit a dead end on that. So now I just don't have any idea. I sent out some other emails to genealogy societies and some of the libraries in London. And I did, I got the one reply back, and that was about it. And then I said, sometimes you get lucky on the Internet with units, of the soldier was in, and that they have home pages for reunion purposes and just that camaraderie in a sense. Well, sure enough, I started to play around with that, and I took the unit that he was in, and I put it into the Internet, and I found a very, very impressive website concerning that unit. And they had a list of names who served in that unit. So taking into consideration when Sergeant Fisher started his tour in Vietnam, and at the time he was killed in 1970, I was able to come up with a good 10 names with email addresses.
That's quite detective work.
So I said, well, I may be, you never know. So I sent the emails. I sent a mass email out, to the 10 or 11 email addresses that were listed. 9 came back undeliverable. 1 didn't respond. And the other one did respond. And he said, give me a few days and I will send you a picture. Sure enough, in a couple of days, a picture of Sergeant Arthur Fisher arrived on my computer.
Amazing.
That was a good, I learned a lot on that one. I really did. And but it's meant to be, I think. That's how I look at it, And
did we find out, how much or if Sergeant Fisher spent any time in North Tonawanda except to enlist?
But
I can see though that it's still in the back of your mind.
It is, but I'm just
you still have
that
more questions. Oh my goodness.
No, but like I said, that home of record really threw you a curve because maybe they were wandering, Maybe people just said, "Well, that's okay. I've gone through the country. I got nothing else to do."
Maybe it was a typo.
I'm just going to enlist.
Yeah.
Well, between that and Belfast, but he's buried in Southampton, England, there in St. Pancras and Finchley Cemetery. He has a government stone, with the curved top, marble, and it says that he was killed in Vietnam, and the date of his death, which was November 20th, 1970.
I mean, this is an amazing amount of information that you're finding out about these folks.
Yeah.
And, there must be such a sense of satisfaction, but it's got to be much more beyond that. I mean, it's just, kind of a feeling does it give you to be able to do this for these families?
I just wanted to do this. It had to be done. It had to be done. The other one that got real personal with me was Specialist Willie Lee Page. He was born in Anniston, Alabama. He would be killed in Vietnam in 1967, and he would be buried in Anniston, Alabama. However, he enlisted in Buffalo, New York. Nothing was coming together for him at all. So again, I went back to the internet and just spent a lot of time on Ancestry.com, and found, you know, the members of his family. I had that information. I had, as far as the order for the gravestone, that information, and the circumstance of his death and the next of kin. I had all of that. I just couldn't make contact. So I found through Ancestry.com some old obituary articles in that. They started to, you know, I got a little bit better using it, I guess. And I found that he had left Anniston when he was 6 years old and moved to Buffalo with his mother. And his mother died in 1964. So I'm saying, you know, I had his date of birth and everything through the Kofelt database from the internet and everything. So I was just trying. Okay, and the obituary did say that he also played football and basketball and graduated from a Buffalo public school. So I said, okay, now back down to Central Library. Let's start going through all the. So you're trying to figure out how old he was, when he may have graduated. You know, he was born. Let me see if I can remember what his date of birth was. I can't remember right now.
1946,
right. So we're figuring that graduation, 1964, that's the same year his mother dies. Did he finish school? What happened? But his home of record is Buffalo, so he had to enlist in Buffalo or get drafted in Buffalo. He could have, you know, got drafted, which he did. He was drafted. And so, sure enough, I started to go through what yearbooks were available down at Century Library, and I just couldn't hit it at all. Just couldn't do it. And then, you know, I don't know how many trips I made down there. Then I just went back the last couple of times, just recently, and I said, you know, maybe he didn't. Maybe he was camera shy that day. You know how you didn't show up for your photograph or whatever? But he played football and basketball. I should be able to find him. There should be something. And so I said, you know, I got to pay closer attention to the underclassmen. You know, whether or not my eyes get blurry or not, I got my magnifying glass. I got to pay more attention to them. And sure enough, on this last try, just last week, I started to go through. I got to Burgard High School. Okay, they didn't have a 64 yearbook at Central Library. So I said, I'm going to the 63 yearbook. And they had that. And sure enough, I start going through the underclassmen. And in the junior classmen, I find Willie Lee Page in a homeroom picture or whatever. So now I'm saying, you know, he's got to be a 64 graduate. And I can't remember just how I confirmed that he was. But I went home and I said, I went online because sometimes you can explore yearbooks. They won't let you, you know, enlarge it or not. But I found a 64, and sure enough, I could just barely make out Willie Lee Page in one of the sports things. And so I said, okay, I got to get this yearbook. I said, so I went online, I went to eBay, and I found a 1964 Craftsman. It was their yearbook for sale. I bought it.
With your own money.
And, you know, it's en route. Mm-hmm. Should be here by Saturday, and we will finally get that picture of Willie Lee Page. And I will take that yearbook down to Central Library, and I will donate it to them so they can fill that slot on the shelf, and nobody else will have to go through this aggravation that I did.
Oh, my goodness. This is such a legacy that you're leaving, Pat.
I said, I am not going to give up on him. We are going to find him no matter what, and we did.
And you're going to give a face to each one of those casualties.
Right. That's what they deserve, you know, really. I was telling Norm before we, you know, sat down here with you, how as I walk through the cemeteries, as much as I do in that, I start to see the floral arrangements on those, on all veterans' graves, you know, starting to be less and less and less. I mean, there are not that many parents alive anymore, and in some cases, brothers and sisters. And, you know, to me, and the way I feel, they're about to die a second time, meaning nobody's going to remember them anymore. And it's not right. You know, this is our generation. This I consider to be our responsibility, to remember not only them and the sacrifices that they made, but also their families. These are the ones whose dreams went unfulfilled. So many of them never saw their newborn children. And, of course, all of them, if they had children, didn't see their children grow up. You know, it's the least we can do to keep them alive, in a sense.
And like you said, this is a work in progress. There are thousands of uses I can see for this database. I'm sure you're still developing a plan for that, for sharing this information.
Right. You know, when we first posted it on Forest Lawn's website, we received letters and inquiries and even phone calls from all throughout the country. You know, and, you know, nobody, and of course, why would they, had a bad thing to say. They were just so grateful. And it brought out members of those that were killed or died in Vietnam, family members. And I met so many. And they were just so thankful and so emotional that their loved one was not going to be forgotten. And that's the whole purpose of this. You know, we want them and their lives, to be remembered and their families to be remembered. Because they made a sacrifice, too.
And, Norm, what's your service record?
Okay, I enlisted here in Buffalo, and I took basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey. Then I went on to intelligence school in Fort Holabird, Maryland. And then I was given orders to go to Vietnamese language school for a year at Fort Bliss, Texas. And it turns out I was there the same time Pat was, and we didn't know each other.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Was that a standard at the time? People went to Texas to learn Vietnamese?
Well, they had support commands all over. The Defense Language Institute is out in Monterey, California, where I would have loved to have gone for language school for a year. However, as the war ramped up, they set up support commands. They would be teaching 2-week, 4-week, 6-week, 12-week courses at forts all around the country. Fort Bliss was the major second support command for the language school. And we had all varied courses there, but the one I was in was for a year. For me, it was actually very enjoyable. I like foreign languages, so to be able to study Vietnamese 8 hours a day and get paid for it was a great opportunity. I subsequently, of course, went to Vietnam, and I worked as an interpreter interrogator. I was fortunate that more than 50% of the time I was able to be in division headquarters processing prisoners and documents and that sort of thing. So I didn't have to spend all my time out in the field. And if you're going to have the experience, I came through it whole and learned a lot from it.
And what does it mean to have this enormous amount of data and biographical information available to share?
Well, it's been a labor of love, and Pat will tell you that. I mean, he's been in love with it for 2 decades. As I got involved, I just realized that these were not, as the song says, they're not just a name on a wall. They are individuals who had lives up until they were cut short. And to have them remembered, and at this point, if I can segue, to be part of an actual physical wall of faces at the new education center that is planned to be built in Washington, D.C., right adjacent to the wall and the Lincoln Memorial, will just be a great educational tool for the country, for those who, at this point, Vietnam is just a footnote in the history books. To have their sacrifices honored and their names remembered is very important to me and to so many of us.
It's obviously, this is a very personal project, mission for you guys. And you have another very personal event coming up on Monday. And how is that related to this?
Okay. For the last 9 months, I have been working to help raise funds to build the new education center at the Wall. It's going to be a 25,000-square-foot underground structure. That way, being right there among the monuments, it will not won't have a two-story high-rise among the monuments. But there will be the Wall of Faces in there. There will be the collection, rotating collection of over 400,000 items that have been left at the Wall. There will be a hall to honor all the service, the legacy of service for all branches throughout the history of our country. And they're all going to also in the Wall of Faces going to be honoring the Iraq and Afghanistan casualties until such time as they can have their own monument in D.C.
And those Western New Yorkers are going to be on that wall.
Yes, they are. They are. And so as I was going along, I am getting back into the entertainment business, which is something I did part-time, as they say. Semi-professional means don't quit your day job. And I have roots and connections with the local music scene going back 40 years. And the owner of Sportsman's Tavern is a personal friend. And I approached him and asked him if I might do a benefit, a fundraiser, for the Education Center at the Wall. And he agreed to make the club available and to have me do this performance. And so Monday night, May 15th, this Monday, I will be doing a one-man show. My son Erickson will be actually playing drums with me. He's also a musician. And we will be doing an evening of songs for baby boomers and veterans, and hopefully raising a lot of money. I think we've sold over 100 tickets so far for the show. We're expecting a good door crowd, so there will probably be 150 to 250 people there on Monday night, and we welcome everybody.
What's the song that you referred to earlier about giving a face to these young soldiers?
The song is called "He's Not Just a Name on a Wall."
How does that go?
I'm going to hold that off for Monday night, if I may. The second most popular song in Vietnam at the USO shows, the most popular being "We've Got to Get Out of This Place" by the Animals. But the second most popular song at these shows in Vietnam was "Green, Green Grass of Home." And if you'd like a few bars of that, I don't have my guitar, but here we go. The old hometown looks the same as I step down from the train, and there to meet me is my mama and my papa. Down the lane I look, and there runs Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherry. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Yes, they'll all come to meet me, arms a-reaching, smiling sweetly, as again I touch the green, green grass of home. The old house is still standing, though the paint is cracked and dried, and there's that old oak tree that I used to play on. Down the lane I walk with my sweet Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Then I awake and look around me at this jungle that surrounds me, and I realize that I was only dreaming, 'cause there's a medic and my buddies by me. Dust off's coming, but it's too late for me, and again I'll touch the green, green grass of home. Yes, they'll all come to see me 'neath the shade of that old oak tree, as they lay me 'neath the green, green grass of home.